Hey everybody, Kevin Williams here, the Oneida Admissions Consulting Podcast for, let's see, it's April 5th, 2012, springtime, the birds are chirping. So, alright, today I think I'm going to talk about some updates. We had some clients get into some great schools, give a quick overview, and then I'm going to get into basically an issue that always kind of dominates. Like when we give presentations, you know, this is kind of a question that always comes up in the Q&A. Okay, and that is, you know, does your area of focus matter? Does your major matter? Does this particular program matter for if you want to do XYZ for the rest of your life, you know? So, you know, it's a question of path to what you ultimately want to do, you know, to what degree does your path matter? So anyway, we're going to dig into that because that's it's a pretty deep question. All right. So first, by the way, here in New York and it's sunny out, it's like, 61 degrees or something like that. And this morning it was like 40. I don't know why. Like, I feel like the weather is just changing a little more drastically here in New York. Like, this reminds me of St. Louis. Like, one day it'll be 80, the next day it'll be down in the 40s. But anyway, all right. Yeah, so let me give you the kind of a client update here. So we had, over the past week, we had some people get into some amazing schools. That's awesome. So on the law school side, we had one of our esteemed clients get into a law school. Yeah, she got in. You know, for her, she wanted to stay local to New England, so she applied to kind of the New England schools here. She got into Cardozo and Brooklyn. I think she also applied to NYU and some others outside of what we helped her with. But she just got an acceptance letter, so we're happy for her. And she was a case where she's going to go off and she's definitely going to do some type of either policy work surrounding incarcerated males, or some type of law surrounding incarcerated males. Her basic kind of passion, like what she feels she was like put here to do based on her story, is she wants to really affect change with like incarcerated males. And that's a good thing, you know? Yeah, not too often do we have intelligent people that, you know, are just haven't gone through the kind of the young male thing, like really feel that impassioned. I mean, they're out there, but they don't dominate the airwaves. And so she is definitely one of the few and far between. So it's nice to see people do well and get in and get closer to making that big splash, right? Doesn't that make you feel good when you see that? It makes me feel good. So good for her. And it's a pleasure working with people like that that want to make real big impacts, kind of, you know, in line with what they believe, their passions, issues, and all that. But, you know, certainly, you know, in an area where that, you know, it personally resonates. I definitely know some younger men, let's just say, that that can use a little bit more discipline. This reminds me of like some advice my dad like gave, man, like ever since I was a kid. He would say, so he was in the Army and I went into, when I went to Navy back in like 93, that summer I went to boot camp. He was like, every young man needs to go to a boot camp experience, just needs a foot up their ass. And you know what? Part of me says, he's true. I mean, it's part of me said he's right. You know, I think that's true. I think, most young men, you know, unless they played sports or unless they go into the military and really have it beaten into them, like the concept of it's not always about you, and you know, just needs to get that kind of I'm a man of world just beat out of them, you know, just beaten down just a little bit and kind of reshaped and reformatted and built up again. you know, because I think young boys, for some reason, when they get to that, like, mid-teens, you know, 16, 17, 18, you know, they're trying to prove themselves so much that they kind of lose perspective. Anyway, you get my point. So, anyway, that's why it personally resonates with me. So, good for her. I'm really proud of her. Anyway, that's on the law school side. On the business school side, we had some people get in. We had one client get into Wharton. That was great. He had gotten into Berkeley, and he came out of finance. So he's one of those. His story is, you know, from Oakland, California, born and raised. You know, born into a family that, you know, had some hard knocks and made it to investment banking out of undergrad. And then he switched and got a great private equity role, you know, and he applied to some outstanding schools. And so he got into Berkeley and then got into Wharton. So we helped him create his story with his essays and his application and which schools to apply to. And so it feels very good. He's a case where it's like, you know how you just meet people that just come from nothing and get to certain places? He's one of those guys. Yeah, and the world definitely needs more folks like that. You know, so it's fun to work with people that, you know, let's face it, didn't just kind of arrive on this planet with everything handed to them. You know, he has perspective. And even if you do have a situation where you arrived in this world with things handed to you, try to, you know, if someone, you can't control what you were born into, obviously, but you can recognize that and have self-awareness enough so that you can kind of acknowledge that and make decisions and put yourself into certain scenarios that demonstrate that you have a much broader point of view and appreciate different perspectives, right? Right? That's what we wish everybody could do, especially those that came from more fortunate means. So anyway, so we are very happy with him, very proud of him. And we also had another business school client who, she got into, I think I talked about this last week, but I think last week she had gotten into HBS, and this week she got into Stanford or vice versa. Anyway, over the past couple weeks, she got into both HBS and Stanford is the point. So anyway, there you go. And, her story, you know, I mean, she came out of a kind of a corporate, you know, she did business development, kind of business strategy at a large corporate, entity here in New York City. And, one of the large credit card companies. And, you know, I remember when we first started working together, you know, she was a little apprehensive about how much she should be talking about, you know, the pivotal women in her life, you know? And so my work with her was very intensively on the front end, figuring out, you know, what is it that really gets you excited at your core level, you know? So in other words, regardless of whether we're talking about your teen years, your 20s, your 30s, what's always going to be relevant to you and what shaped that, you know, like the people in your family that you've looked up to, what were the reasons that you looked up to them? And what does it say about your value system, you know? And she initially thought it was going to be one thing, but I kind of pushed her to help her see herself as a young, you know, woman who wants to have a certain kind of life and be able to kind of, as a woman, demonstrate to other women that it is possible to have the kind of life that you want and to be impactful, to prove to others that, you know, you can be a professional woman, have a great personal life, and also make a difference to people around you, you know? And that resonates. Like that, you know, even if you're not a woman, that right there will resonate with you because we're all rooting for that person who's trying to, you know, says, look, I'm just not going to give up. You know, I think I'm not going to compromise because the age-old the age-old kind of, what's the best wording here, advice that you hear from, at least I heard it, from a lot of the female CEOs that like came back to business school to speak to us. And, you know, the conversation always revolved around, okay, well, what's your best advice? And, you know, a lot of them, you know, kind of said, well, you know, reality is, you know, as a woman, you can pretty much have a great career, be a great parent, be a great wife, but you can have two of the three. You can't have all three. And, you know, that's a case of, you know, clearly, you know, very pragmatic kind of, perspective on, listen, you know, life beats you down. And, you know, let's be honest, you know, the female CEOs, and then on the political side, you know, Hillary and so many of the other, you know, representatives that are female. I mean, this is like the first, this is for all intents and purposes, the first or second wave of women in positions of power and influence to this degree. You know, I mean, yeah, there's like one or two in the 70s, but you know, the 90s and the 2000s, I mean, that's when you started seeing the C-level suite female execs, right? For all intents and purposes. I mean, you had some here and there. I mean, back in the 90s, you had Ann Fudge. Where was she? She was at, that was Ann Fudge. Anyway, yeah, we can look her up later, but you get my point. All right, so that's why I'm very happy to work with clients, in particular female clients like her, because, you know, there's so much more to your story than you think. You know, and that's my job, to kind of help you dig that out. And, you know, it might be different. It will be different based on, you know, what kind of family you were born into and what happened to you as a child, what kind of community you were raised in, right? What kind of pivotal defining moments you had when you were a teenager, you know, throughout high school, you know, what you did on the side. When you were in middle school, you know, what you did after school, were you kind of a creative kid, or was sports your thing? You know, I mean, this is all going to be somewhat different. So, anyway, get the idea. Okay. All right, so let's move to talk about this this ongoing kind of conversation. It always pops up, man. Like, in every presentation, regardless of whether I'm talking to a college crowd, a high school crowd, or you know, some young professionals that are trying to get into business school someday, you know, talking at the banks, or if it's, you know, some political or policy-oriented group, kind of like the Young Professionals of Foreign Policy, you know, trying to go off to either law school or do a Master's of Public Policy or an MPA. You know, ultimately, at the end of that presentation, when it comes to Q&A, and, you know, people come up to me, it always kind of... conversation always, there's always like a few people that huddle in a circle. You know how like you get like some networking event, you see like people huddled in circles? That's hilarious. It's like little silos of conversation. Anyway, and it's like somebody holding court, and it's like people, then everyone's like trying to edge in their question but not sound stupid. Anyway, I think that's hilarious. I just analyze social dynamics, put it under a microscope. Anyway, I think that's funny. So it always comes up, regardless, is the point, this topic. And that topic is, listen, you know, to what degree do I have to go down this path, or what path should I go down if I ultimately want to have a career that kind of sort of resembles this? And that applies to whether, you know, that degree you insert college, right, the bachelor's, BA, BS, whatever, an MBA, a law degree, Master of Public Policy, right? So in other words, for example, you know, folks that want to, let's just for example's sake, like when I'm talking to a policy-oriented organization, right? And so there's everyone in the crowd either wants to go to law school or get a policy degree, you know, an MPP or MPA. So some people may actually want to practice law, right? And others may want to do policy work. Others may want to basically be an entrepreneur, a social entrepreneur, and start nonprofits or microfinance organizations. So, you know, to what degree is law school the best avenue for them to get to where they want to be, or is, you know, the policy degree the best avenue for them to get to where they want to be? Or is it an MBA? Because, you know, they're basically talking about starting organizations, and in today's economy you have to be mindful of revenues and costs and being able to manage growth, right? And be able to kind of be facile on different types of leadership, whatever, right? So that's that example. Or is it, you know, an audience where, you know, everyone's a captive audience and everyone is, you know, thinking about, oh, I want to go off to business school because I want to ultimately kind of work for a large company that's really on the cutting edge of throwing technology over media and seeing what falls out of that combination, because that's just very interesting to me. So, you know, I want to lead a studio. So to what degree is the MBA a good idea for me? Or whatever, insert your career of choice, right? Yeah, maybe you want to go be an entrepreneur. Maybe you want to stay in finance but change functions, right? So to what degree is the MBA valuable, right? And then on the college side, it's, okay, well, to what degree does the Ivy League matter? Or some liberal arts school or a technical degree? And even within the school, you know, to what degree does it matter what I major in? Should I major in something hard, like engineering, math, finance, accounting? Or is it okay if I just am extremely impassioned about history or English or psychology, and I can throw a minor that might show I can kind of get through some quantitative coursework, right? So there's all these questions that surround, you know, pathway. So that's obviously like an ongoing kind of conversation. That conversation has been around, by the way, ever since we were cavemen. So anyway, just insert your metaphor there. But yeah, let's attack this in this order. How about that? How about this? How about we talk about college first? Yeah, let's do that. What's our time? Let's do a time check here. So I can end up being very efficient with this hour. All right, so we're 17 minutes into it. Okay, so all right, gotcha. All right, 43 more minutes to go. Okay, so college. All right, let's start with size. Large versus small. You know, what do you get out of going to a large university, right? Like Ohio State, Michigan, you know, like a Stan, you know, it's a really big footprint, you know, university, you know. What do you get out of that versus a small liberal arts school? And we're talking four-year degree here. Small class sizes, you know, intimate campus, right? You're going to know a larger portion of your class. You don't feel like you're a number. Right. So I chose the latter path. You know, for me, I was like, you know what? I want to, if I'm going to go to college, I want to feel like I am, you know, on that kind of, in that kind of classic college kind of campus that is very intimate. And in the classroom, I actually want to be able to like talk to the professor. I don't want a TA. I don't want somebody trying to get a graduate degree who may not really give a shit about me. You know, I don't want to be a number. I want to be able to engage the guy who has the PhD, who wrote the papers and wrote the book. I want to talk to him. So that was me. You know, that's an inclination that was based on basically me and how I felt I would be interested in it and engaged, and how I best learn. Okay? So ability to be interested, engaged, and how I consume information. And I think those three things are what matters for getting at the right answer to that question for you. If you will be more interested and engaged in a large university setting because maybe you're going to have a wider range of courses, or maybe, you know, you're going to have an academic, let's change it to sport. Maybe you're going to have an athletic department that is NCAA D1, and that for you is a large part of, you know, what you want out of a college experience. Let's face it. Maybe, you know, the Duke model, the Stanford model of having great sports teams, or you know, whoever just won March Madness, that's going to be for you. That is a part of your undergrad experience, and that's what you want to have. Great. You know, maybe you're willing to sacrifice on the student-teacher ratio a little bit. You know, maybe you don't need to be able to have, you know, full access to the actual professor, the PhD who wrote the book. Maybe, you know what, if you can just kind of get your questions in and out and answered by the TA, you know, maybe that's fine for you. And that's great. That is that. So that is the proper way for getting at the answer of that question for you. And that's it, man. That's definitely how you address the large versus small school. And then on top of that, the icing on that cake after you answer those three questions for you, for yourself, it comes down to culture and how you feel when you're walking those halls. So this is why I'm a big proponent of, regardless of what, where you are, what degree you're shooting for, you got to step on campus. You do. You just do. You have to, even if you end up going to that school, you apply to your dream school, you know, and you get accepted, you're excited, and it's, let's say it's March. Well, come August, yeah, there's a lot that's going to be occurring, a lot that's going to be happening. So in order for you to hit the ground running faster, you have to come up to speed. And one of the best ways to do that is actually showing up on campus and talking to current students, asking them how they got up to speed when they were in your shoes. You know, maybe some of them, you'd be surprised how many students before they started actually took classes on the side. Or, you know, they made sure that, you know, their first semester, they did not take certain courses or certain professors, and they made sure they had a good foundation. And that way they approached their GPA out of the gate the highest way, in the most effective way possible. Because let's face it, you know, getting a, averaging out to a 3.5 starting from a 3.0 is difficult. That means you got to knock out a 4.0 at the same number of hours, right? Right? Yes, that's right. And that's difficult to do. So you want to really make sure you hit the ground running. Great way to do that, show up on campus, walk the halls, talk to the students, get to the cafeteria, figure out, you know, how far away the library is, you know, where are you going to be most efficient and have the best time studying. Because guess what? That month in, right? That first couple of quizzes that the professor didn't tell you about, you know, the first project, take home weekend project. Oh, I didn't know about that, did you? Yeah, it's always more work than you think it's going to be, always. So you need to have your plan B, plan C for doing that work, man. That is probably the best advice I'd give somebody who got into a school, to college, and it's that summer before college. That is definitely what I would say do. Try to figure out and think through their daily routine and have that down, you know, before they actually move into the dormitory. So that means you got to go to the admit weekend if you can. Some of you might be able not be able to afford that. I get it. But, you know, if there's a way you can take a bus, you know, on an off weekend and, you know, do the same thing, do it. It's worth it. You know, if they say you can move in, you know, in August, late August, and that's when you meet your roommate, show up a couple days early. You know, that kind of stuff, can be invaluable, dude. All right? Take it from me. All right, so that addresses size, big school, small school. All right? So the next question that we get a lot, you know, especially like on the college side, is major. Major, what should we major in? Major. All right, so I would, clearly, you know, you want a job after college, right? And that sounds like every dad since the beginning of time. Well, just be sure you can get a job. Be sure you can get a job. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with that English degree? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Well, here's my response to that. I think that, people go to school to get an education, to become more. You know, I liken it to in high school, you kind of learned about the history of mankind, right? The history of mankind was high school. You think about that, right? Pyramids, the United States history, you know, whatever country you come from, their history, you know, medieval times, you know, American Revolution, Industrial Revolution, right? Civil rights movement. I mean, you're learning about the history of mankind. That's high school. College, you're learning about the world around you today. You're studying economics, you know, you're studying supply and demand. You're studying, you know, mathematics, you know, what's the cutting edge problems that are occupying physicists today. How do you think properly through the best literature works, and how do you start thinking on your own terms and tapping into your emotions so that you can create your own literature? How do you think through what it means to be a psychologist? You know, what occupies the mind and what does not occupy the mind? If you're studying sociology, you know, how do sociologists break down anthropology versus, right? You get the point, right? And a lot of the case studies and the lab experiments are looking at the world around you today. So that's college, right? The world today. If you go off to grad school, then it's, you know, you're kind of focusing, and depending on what program you're going to, obviously law, you know, that's it's kind of a different animal because you're going back in time. You're analyzing case law. You're going to think like a lawyer. It's an exercise on how to think. Okay. If you go to business school, it is an exercise on how do companies and profit oriented organizations go about doing their business? And then, you know, you have a lot of speakers that come through and, you know, you have kind of roll up your sleeves kind of advice that they give you, right? Policy, same thing, but applied to the public sector. So anyway, you get my point here. So majors, you know, I think you need to check off a box, and this is the advice I give everybody when we're talking about college and I'm talking to high school students. You have to think about putting yourself in an environment that encourages you to learn how to think and to process the world around you the best. Okay, so you want an environment that is conducive. It's almost like an incubator or pressure cooker, but you know that's too strong of a word, too strong of a concept, because you're going to want to have to release that pressure over time. But the product, you have to be able to create that product of knowledge on your own for the rest of your life. How you consume information and learn for the rest of your life, you know, it could be 60, 70, 80 more years. You should have the foundation for how to do that instilled in you through college. That's what those 4 years, if there's any most valuable kind of asset that people get from those 4 years, whether they become an astronaut, whether they become a, you know, an author, whether they become whatever, right? Those 4 years for them should have taught them how to analyze the world, analyze themselves, process information, learning how to think, right? Right? Because college is regurgitation. I'm sorry, high school is regurgitation. College is processing, analysis, making sense of the information, not just regurgitating it back to the professor. And that's probably the biggest difference between college and high school. You're learning how to think. You're learning how to process. You're learning how to learn, right? You should be exercising both your left brain and your right brain, right? The liberal arts schools, you know, encourage you to have a broad-based basis of knowledge, you know, in the classics and the arts. And then you can focus after the core curriculum, right? So that's kind of, I think, what a great college education should be providing the next generation of kids, of people. So for you, very few people know what they want to do. Short of, you know, you're just that guy or that girl that knows that you want to go off to med school and be a doctor because, you know, you come from a family of doctors and that's just what you need to do, because you think that that's what you're put on this planet for, fine. You know, biology, the biology pre-med curriculum is for you, great. If you know that, you know, I'd say the second piece of the kids that want to go off to law school, and, you know, you don't really, there's not a set pathway to go off to law school, but a lot of the popular majors for people that check that box, obviously your political science. But clearly, I mean, you want to think about it, you know, aside from being any of those types of people, you want to think about it in terms of, I'm a big believer in challenging yourself. So yeah, refine what you're good at. So if you're just naturally gifted in mathematics or quantitative stuff, fine. You know, you can major in something that plays to your strengths, get that GPA up and have a degree that will serve you, you know, practically for a long period of time, learning how to problem solve, think analytically, analyzing a big problem, carving it up into chunks, analyzing each individual piece, thinking about it, twisting it, taking it apart, putting it back together, then assembling everything together and having a conclusion, right? That's what the more analytical majors will teach you how to do, whether it's math, physics, right? I'm a big believer, however, that, you know, if you were just that math guy, or you were just that a beautiful mind person, you know, that just can just think in terms of numbers and is very analytically gifted, you should challenge yourself and have some type of creative outlet. So that I'm a big proponent of those types of folks, you know, having like a minor in English or in philosophy or in whatever, right? Just kind of your personal passion outlet, because that's going to serve you for the rest of your life, dude. That you're always going to be able, like, the happiest people are the most well-rounded ones. Trust me. I mean, it's the folks that just were in a pressure cooker and had their heads down for 25 years and end up blowing a gasket when they're 40. So you don't want to be that, right? So just practice that release valve now in the form of a minor that's different than your major. So if your major's left brain, encourage, you know, challenge yourself, push yourself to have a right brain minor, or vice versa. You know, if you ultimately want to give, you know, improv, you know, traveling with an improv troupe a go after college graduation, I get it. You know, maybe you're in the second city vein, you know, maybe you just got into Northwestern. Maybe you have the Groundlings kind of inclination out there in LA, right? You want to give UCB a shot. You're kind of going through the NYU Columbia ranks in New York City, whatever. Point is, you know, you want to be a performer, and so you might be a theater major, okay? I would also suggest you do the same thing, right? Have a minor that is on the other side of the brain. You know, because look, those people have to support their lifestyle and support all those auditions for years through waiting tables, okay? And you want to be able to demonstrate that you can earn an extra few dollars an hour. It just makes it easier. Makes rent not that intimidating, period, okay? So that's how I would suggest people think about it at the college level. The grad school level, you know, I remember when I got very close to applying to law school, and I didn't, but it was mainly because I knew I didn't want to practice law. I thought going through law school would be an amazing intellectual exercise. I still enjoy, you know, just kind of like that, the old paper chase movie. Well, I'm dating myself, but anyway, you get the idea. That whole experience is just attractive from an intellectual kind of standpoint. However, it can be very, very brutal. Brutal law school experience. If you actually talk to lawyers, you know, no one said, oh yeah, law school was awesome. So I basically am of the mindset that, you know, unless you want to practice law, you know, ask yourself, is law school the best avenue for you to get to where you want to be? You know, the answer to that question might still be yes. You know, maybe you want to be able to, you know, think in the way that a lawyer thinks, but you ultimately, you know, want to start a company that deals with legal issues and a certain type of demographic of a part of the world, you know, a part of some country in some faraway land, an emerging market, or, you know, here in the United States, and the specific approach you want to take, you have to be facile and have an understanding of the law to be successful. Right? So that would clearly make sense for you to kind of go off to law school if you did not want to actually practice. So you get the idea. You get the point. For folks that are thinking about business school, you know, most business programs are general management degrees. In other words, you don't have to major. You don't, you know, it's not like college in that sense, but, you know, where Wharton, you know, you think you're asked to pick an emphasis, if you will. And what most folks do is they say, okay, I want to ultimately have a career that resembles this for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And that might look like I want to basically ultimately be an investor that touches on these types of issues, or I ultimately want to be, you know, in nonprofit. And so I'm going to have to be facile in these other types of dynamics and issues, you know, managing growing enterprises, nonprofit management, or perhaps it's, you know, investing in non-market environments, in non-market situations, whatever, right? So that's how I say, you know, because generally the first year of business schools, you know, more of them are edging towards this trend of, you know, having Taylor-based curricula, right? I think Stanford was one of the first to start that a while back, a few years ago. And other schools are kind of adjusting their curricula a little bit. But for all intents and purposes, there is a core for at least the first semester. And, I would encourage people in business school, the ones that end up getting the jobs that they're most happy with. Yeah, they were definitely able to take classes that they felt would kind of hit their career from different angles, different functions, different industries. But they also were very good at, you know, kind of the blocking and tackling, which, and by that I mean, dude, like these, the guys, the people who ended up by business school graduation with jobs that you were like, how the hell did you get that, dude? What? You're the right hand to the CEO of what? You know, they did a lot of legwork. And for the rest of us, you know, who don't do that legwork, that means you have to go through the Career Management Center. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, that's a little easier. But, I would definitely say it matters to take a bunch of different types of courses that hit what kind of career path you want to have from different angles. You know, for the business school folks. So anyway. All right. So what is that? A good overview? College, law, business? All right. I think so. I think that was a good overview for this podcast or that stuff. Yeah. All right. So we're 37 minutes into this thing. Damn. All right. I got another podcast I have to do after this. So, all right. Let's hit the next little bullet point. How about that? All right. Geography. So, all right, everyone wants to know, look at, you know, does it matter where physically we go to school, right? So, you know, West Coast schools, East Coast schools, Midwestern schools, you get it. Just give me a second here. Da-da-da-da. All right. So, anyway, sorry about that, guys. Somebody's sending me a message for another podcast I got to do after this podcast. Anyway, it's my interview. West Coast, East Coast, Midwest, North, South. All right. So, basically, the way I address this topic is, look, I mean, you know, whatever enables you to have the best undergraduate experience, if you're talking about on the college level, or... you know, if you're at the grad school level, what best enables you to have a degree that gives you the most bang for its buck over your lifetime is how you should be framing this up and setting this up, okay? So, you know, if you can, I mean, look, let's just call it what it is. I mean, the numbers shake out such that the best school you get into, brand-wise, usually correlates with the highest career earnings over time. And in recessions, they correlate to being unemployed for the shortest amount of time, okay? So type of school, brand matters, certainly. So your Ivy League, you know, on average, you know, your alumni of Ivy Leagues earn more than alumni of state schools. They just do. It's a fact. Same with business schools, even, you know, this, you know, go through the, you know, typically, so you have to look at rankings kind of not in absolute terms, but, you know, kind of organically. So I wouldn't go year by year and say, oh, what's the top 1, 2, 3 school of U.S. News and World Report? What's the top 3 schools for, you know, fill in the blank for, you know, other rankings? Don't look at it that way, because they wiggle so much. It's ridiculous. That's the wrong way to think about it. But each school certainly has a caliber and a cachet and a brand value associated with it. Of course it does. And a caliber of education that it provides, okay? However, a lot of people fall into the trap of thinking, oh, well, I got into Northwestern, I should not therefore go to Washington University of St. Louis, to their Olin school. Well, look, if you know you're going to stay in the Midwest, and you know you want to be a business major, it might make sense for you to go to the John M. Olin School of Business at WashU instead of the business program at Northwestern, right? It might. Certainly there's a case for that. So that's an example of regionally, you know, you're committed to a region, you know, you just kind of know in your gut you're going to kind of be in the Midwest for the rest of your life. That's fine. And, you know, how does that interplay with, you know, kind of competitiveness of school? So that's one example. Another example might be, all right, look, you know, you're at the business school level, right? So let's just use that as the next example. You got into an East Coast school and a West Coast school, okay? But you know that you're going to be in the East Coast long term. Why would you go to the West Coast school? Well, for you, guess what? You might already have the network that East Coast business school would provide to you. And if you're going to pay, $200,000 for an MBA, you want access to a network that you didn't already have. And you know that someday you're going to be going down, you're going to be doing more business out west. You're going to want to have a national network. So guess what? For you, it would make sense to kind of go across country and go to that West Coast school. Boom. There you go. That's a classic example. Law school. So for law schools, probably a little bit more so than business schools. You know, there are people that become amazing entrepreneurs and successes in business that did not go to, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, right? The quote unquote, what people feel is like the holy trinity of B schools. Whereas law school, you know, if you're trying to go be a judicial clerk, or if you are trying to get into some of the top law firms, you clearly have to go to either Yale, Harvard, or Stanford. Yale's number one in terms of judicial placement. So if you want to be a Supreme Court justice clerk, you know, and you're trying to decide between Yale or Stanford, you should probably edge towards Yale if that's what you want to do, right? So that's how things change a little bit for law school. It's a bit more intensive on the brand value and the type of school. So in that instance, I would say you put geography further down on the totem pole of what your priority level should be on the law school side. So there we go. So that's geography. These are just quick overviews, people. Quick overviews. All right. So what is the next little bullet here? I want to attack with you guys. Attacking. All right. The next kind of bullet that, you know, in that conversation, Q&A after presentation that we get, it tends to be, you know, how should people be thinking about their summer experiences? Okay. Summer internships, big deal, obviously, right? Big deal. I don't know what I should do for my first summer, my second summer, my third summer. Well, I'm going to law school, so my first summer should be this, but I need to do that. But my one summer of business school, right? It ends up occupying a lot of thought. So anyway, okay. So for the college folks, internships. So your first internship after freshman year is obviously, before sophomore year, is obviously the most difficult thing to kind of get because you don't have any work experience. And this is where, you know, your enthusiasm and passion needs to come through the most, for sure. Because, you know, you don't have like two or three, you don't have two internships or one internship to kind of base base your experience level off of. You just have some, you know, usually one semester of grades because you're interviewing in the spring, and your passion and enthusiasm, okay? So you need to really be able to convey that and really think through that first internship as, you know, something that's going to give you a strong foundation, you know? So if you want to, you know, it's not imperative that you, you know, end up working, you know, that you stay in that job function that you had as an intern for your freshman year all the way through your sophomore year, summer, junior summer, and then, you know, that's what you're going to be doing, you know, upon graduation. I would argue that that's a bad idea. What you want to do is spread yourself out, but do so in a way that, you know, gives you the most opportunity. So try to get the best, most competitive internship you can get, and that is touching the industry or the function that you're interested in, that you think you're going to be interested in at least for the first 2 years after college graduation. That is how you should be thinking about how to get your first internship. And being able to demonstrate that you are in love and committed to doing that for your first couple years. And by demonstrating that passion and enthusiasm, that's how someone's going to say, you know what, we need to give this kid a shot even though he's coming out of his freshman year. And those are the folks who get the really competitive internships right before sophomore year. That's how they do it, man. So whether it's, you know, working for NASA or Goldman Sachs or getting that McKinsey internship as a freshman that everyone gets normally as a rising senior, that's what they're able to demonstrate. They're able to show that. So there you go. Sophomore year, yeah, I'm a big fan of, you know, do something clearly different from what you did your freshman year as an intern. So I'm a big fan of, you know, it's fine to stay in the same industry, go to a different firm. Or if you're at the same firm, go to a different, entirely different division. Big fan of that. You want to be able to show that that by the time you are interviewing for your full-time job, that you can say, that you can make a compelling argument that, you know what, John, I know who I am and I know who I am not, because I've worked in these three functions at these types of firms, and this is how I know that I want to be in an industry group in the energy space for a bulge bracket firm like yours with this type of culture. And this is exactly why I know that, because I was in a large organization that focused on energy after my freshman year in one function. My second summer, I focused on an entirely different function at the next biggest competitor in that industry. And my last summer, boom. So you get the idea. You're attacking it from different directions, functions within the same industry. So you're being able to show commitment to the industry, but also you're able to show well-roundedness in function and your ability and knowing thyself. That will position you very strongly. Okay? So there you go. There you go. All right. College and law. I'm sorry, business school and law. All right, give me one. Bear with me here. Bear with me. Boop, 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 boop. So, business school. Let's do business school first. Yeah, internships. I would say you get one shot, and I'm a big fan of trying to split that summer. And I would say a lot of the folks that ended up doing well and getting the kind of job that they wanted and getting the gig that they wanted, they were able to kind of get like a main internship of like a typical 8-week program somewhere. Right. And if they wanted to be an entrepreneur, they wanted to be, you know, in VC or tech or something like that, they would have kind of do their last 2 to 3 weeks in kind of a in an entrepreneurial setting, or actually shadowing someone at an investment shop, or on the other side of the business, maybe buy side then sell side, whatever. Anyway, you see the point. They're able to kind of take that one summer and carve it up, and that's a great idea. Short of that, let's just say you want to travel, fine, that's up to you. But that one internship, you should do your best to, if you wanted to make a career change, to go directly to that career during the internship, because it's better to have that argument and make that argument, have that conversation of you switching careers in your first year than your second year. It's just, I've just seen it be pulled off a little bit easier when that conversation is had during their first year than their second year. So now law school. All right. Law school. All right. You get 2 summers, right? So this again kind of gets back to, what do you want to do after law school? Do you want to, what do you want to do? What do you want to do, dude? Do you want to go be a clerk? Do you want to go into nonprofit? Do you want to practice? And what do you want to practice? Do you want to do corporate law? You want to be a litigator? Do you want to? Anyway, you get the idea. So, yeah, I would say definitely think about it the same way you kind of articulated on the college side, only apply it to the type of law career you want to have, or non-law career you want to have. If you want to practice, and you want to do corporate, you have to put yourself on that type of track, meaning it'd be great if you could, let's say you want to go and do corporate work at one of the big New York, white shoe firms. You're Skadden, right? Whatever. Try to get that internship out of your, it has happened out of your first year. Try to do that. And then for your second year, try to go to a similar type of white shoe firm, but work in a different department, so that by the time you're in your third year, you hopefully have an offer from the firm that you worked at during your summer right before your third year, and you kind of take that, and people shop offers all the time, but with that confidence and with that positioning that you have, you're that much more competitive in positioning yourself for that corporate law gig that you want to kind of nail. That applies to, whether you want to be a litigator, whether you don't even want to practice law and you want to go to, start your own thing, or you want to go into nonprofit management, maybe you want to do policy work, right? Try to go directly to that industry, and it's a good idea to, I'd say, get 2 different firms under your belt, 2 of the most competitive firms in that industry, work in departments within those firms. Maybe it's the same department, maybe it's a different one, but the point is 2 of the most competitive firms, and that way you can try to start a bidding war on yourself, and that's how people position themselves in the best way. I think that's very good advice. That's what people that have landed their dream gig out of law school, that was the format that they used. They were able to do that. So whether that applied to policy work or nonprofit management, they were able to kind of do that. So there you go. All right. So we hit college, business, and law. Cool. Yeah, we got through a lot. Wow, time flew. 53 minutes in. All right, guys. All right, so next week, I'm going to try to interview. I think I told you guys I was going to try to get this individual to be an interview this week. It couldn't work out. His schedule got rammed up. But, he's an HBS alum. He went to college in D.C., and it'll be my first interview for you guys here on this podcast. And we're gonna try to be really brutally honest, man. That's the whole point of this pod. I don't want this to sound like a boring ass podcast where you don't get into anything. It just sounds just like, oh my god, just pull my hair out. But we're gonna kind of get at the nuts and bolts and what we wish we knew. And hopefully it'll be pretty informative, and entertaining too. I don't want this to be as boring as all shit. So that's supposed to happen on Sunday. It's Thursday now. So, there you go. All right, everybody. Study hard, put your head down, and the sooner you start all this stuff, the better. So, we're getting people that are reaching out to us now, have already signed up for our consulting services. if that's you, you're going to be applying this fall, reach out to us now. You know, even if it's just to have like a free 30-minute, you know, discussion on the phone assessment, you know, I'll get your resume, you know, I'll get your transcripts or whatever. You kind of give me a quick overview and I'll tell you what I think. How about that? It's for free. So, if you're ready to start, however, you know, I encourage you to start sooner than later, because there's a lot of, you got to put yourself on the couch and it takes an awful long time. Everything always takes longer than you think. It's a general rule in business and life. But you want, by the time these schools post their questions, which is usually midsummer, you know, you want to already be raring to go and knowing what your story is, knowing what schools you're going to be applying to, what your reaches, middle safeties are going to be, knowing who your recommenders are going to be, right? It's a lot of work to be done. You get the idea. Anyway. Because time flies, guys. Time flies. You don't want to be that kid. It's like, I don't know where all the time went. I just don't know. Ram rushing. Kevin, can you hop on the phone tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.? You know, you don't want to be that dude. All right. Okay. All right, everybody. Kevin Williams. And remember, invest in yourself, man. That's the whole point, dude. If I could really wish one thing for the next generation, it would be just value intelligence, value knowledge, you know, and a good way to ensure that is learning how to learn, just soaking up the world around you and analyzing yourself. And a good way to do that is obviously by going to great schools. Now, yeah, you know, how you pay for it, that's another nugget, but clearly getting into the best school is still the best way to ensure happiness, earnings potential, and hell, people meet their significant others. You know, they go to, you know, college sweetheart type of thing, right? Meeting husbands in grad school happens all the time. All right. I think this is enough for today, don't you? I think we covered everything I wanted to cover. I kind of talked about some clients that got into great schools and about the stuff that people don't want to talk about after all of our presentations. So there we go. That was this podcast this week, folks. It is April 5th, and we will talk to you next week. So today we posted on Thursday. Next week I'm going to try to post this on, keep it to Wednesdays. All right. All right, everybody. Take it easy.